This is 91.7 WVXU, Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Last month, the Cincinnati Zoo announced it was breeding a pair of Sumatran rhino siblings to try and save the species, which has dropped to less than 100. The zoo has been working for years to breed Sumatran rhinos, and in 2001 produced the first captive-bred calf in 112 years. We're going to talk about the rhinos, and you can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or email us, talk@wvxu.org. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Later in the hour, we'll talk about concussions and how recent studies show they may be more dangerous than you may realize. But first, joining me are Vice President of Conservation and Science and Director of CREW, that's the Center for Conservation and Research of Endangered Wildlife at the Cincinnati Zoo, Dr. Terry Roth, and Team Leader of Ungulates at the Cincinnati Zoo, Paul Reinhardt. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
I want to start out right away just talking about how serious the situation is for rhinos. When we say there are 100 left, is that 100 total?
Sadly enough, it really is. The estimates that came in March after the new surveys indicated that there's probably no more than 100 Sumatran rhinos left on the entire planet. So it is a species in crisis, that is for sure, and we're very, very concerned about its future.
Why is it important to save a species from becoming extinct?
You know, a lot of people ask that question, and you know, we like to tell everybody that each species on the planet plays a role in the ecosystem and our natural resources. But sometimes I like to actually turn that around a little and say, you know, if a species like the Sumatran rhino that is so non-threatening, non-competitive with humans, it's just isolated in the forest, it wants to get on with its life. You know, I worry that what does it say about humanity if we can't save a species like that? And what will we actually save?
I'm not sure that I've ever been asked that question directly, but I would have to counter, why wouldn't you want to? Because the Sumatran rhino, I mean, I've been in this for about 20 years, taking care of these animals at the Cincinnati Zoo, and they've gone from 500 to 250 and now down to 100. It's just critical. They also encompass some of the same habitat as orangutans, tapirs, tigers. So if the rhino goes that way, those other animals and species are sure to follow.
Well, how does it happen? How does it get to the point? If it was at 500, how did it already get to 100? What's causing their demise?
Yeah, unfortunately, we think there are a number of factors involved here. Poaching certainly has been a primary culprit, and poaching, rhino poaching and elephant poaching are on the rise right now, and it's a very scary situation out there. But in addition to that, we find in Southeast Asia that we find less evidence of poaching than they do in Africa, but we have problems like encroachment into the forests. Roads are being built through these forests. And as I mentioned before, the species is a very solitary species, really does not like to be disturbed by humans in their forest. And when the humans move in, the rhinos become more fragmented. They don't meet up and they don't reproduce as well.
And they all are in Sumatra?
We currently think there's only maybe two or three rhinos in Sabah, Malaysia, which is on the island of Borneo, and the rest are on the island of Sumatra.
How many are in zoos and in captivity around the world?
Right now, there are only 10 in captivity. Really, the Cincinnati Zoo is the only zoo with Sumatran rhinos. We have the pair are there. The other two facilities are breeding centers, but they're not open to the public.
So let's talk about the Cincinnati Zoo. You have two rhinos. Tell us about them.
Hairpan and Suchi. Male and a female, both born here. I've been fortunate enough to work with them mostly from the day they were born until when Hairpan left here for Florida and then ultimately to Los Angeles Zoo, and now he's back here. When you're working with them in a zoo, they're a very keeper-friendly animal. They recognize people. They recognize whether it's their names or people's voices. They love to be hand-fed, their treats, their bananas and apples and things. They're an incredible species of rhino to work with and very important to keep around. It's important to me, I guess, that people know what they are. Sometimes people will go by and they say it's a rhino, but periodically when you're out there talking with people, you get people who know it's a Sumatran rhino. They stop and ask the questions. We even have people periodically come from England and other parts of the world just to see the Sumatran rhino.
How is it different from the typical rhino?
They're the smallest of the living rhino species. They're hairy. They encompass a very different habitat than, say, your African and Indian rhino, in that they're a forest animal. They come from the deep, dark forest of Malaysia, Indonesia, and there's a little bit of a challenge. They look markedly different to me, obviously, but I'm not sure that they look different to other people.
If you have a question, 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Dr. Roth, talk to us about what's happening. This is a brother and sister pair that you have right now, and you are breeding them. That seems unusual.
It is unusual. And in fact, it's exactly the type of thing we try to avoid 99% of the time. But we're faced with this very unique situation where there are only two left in the United States. They are brother and sister. And the time is running out for the species. And so we made that hard decision that it's better to do something, even if it's not an ideal situation, to do something to try and produce more calves as quickly as possible. Rather than sitting back and waiting to see if a suitable partner shows up. We are going to try. We actually haven't started yet, but the goal is to breed Suchi and Harapan, hopefully in the next few months.
Now, will that be natural? Is that in vitro? How do you do that?
We will try natural breeding. That's what we've excelled at the Cincinnati Zoo. We have produced three calves that way. To date, artificial insemination has not been successful in the Sumatran rhino, even though the crew has been successful with it, with the Indian rhino, and another group has been successful with white rhinos. But Sumatran rhinos are their own little challenge.
So this is kind of a strange question, I guess, but how do you force them? Do you just send them out and hope that they decide they like each other? I mean, how do you do that?
It's a tricky, tricky business, and that's why Paul here is the expert. We use a science to determine when we think the female is going to be receptive with the male. And that's when we put them together. But even when we think it's the right day, there can be a lot of an aggression between the two. Again, we've said over and over again, they're solitary. They don't just live together peacefully. And so you put them together when you think the female will be receptive, but the keepers play a huge role in making sure they don't get too aggressive with each other, separating them if we think that, you know, it's not quite right or that things just get out of hand. And so Paul's a pro at throwing bananas and closing gates. And
what do you do?
It's hard to explain. We have a yard set up in that you can open gates and actually turn two yards into one. This is where having a good relationship with the rhinos helps, because at times, and it's not all the time, I'm in there in the yard with them, monitoring them. Yes, I have bananas, and you talk to them, you encourage the male, even though he doesn't understand, to settle down. You try to get Suchi to play nice, what we say, even though they are solitary. Suchi seems to get a big kick out of and enjoy being in with other animals. She's born and raised here at the Cincinnati Zoo, so she hasn't learned rhino playtime from her mother and from other animals. So it can be really good some days. It can be kind of hair-raising others.
And so how soon do you think you will to work towards breeding them? I mean, how soon is that going to happen?
Well, when Harapan first arrives at the zoo, like with all animals that arrive there, they go through a quarantine period. Even though their health is checked out before they're sent to us, it's like a double check system just to be sure. And he has just cleared that. And we're in the process now of analyzing some samples to make sure he's sexually mature, because he's really just on the cusp with his age.
How old is he?
He's just over 6 years old. And so we believe his older brother, Andalus, who was sent to Sumatra, we believe he reached sexual maturation between 6 and 6.5. So we anticipate that Harapan is right about there as well. But we need to confirm that before we put them together.
How does this all get paid for? I mean, is there an expense with all of this? Or is this just, I assume transporting the animals costs money, but how does it get paid for? Is there a fund for Sumatran rhino preservation?
It's actually an expensive project that we've taken on at the zoo, partly because the rhino diet is so specialized. They have to eat browse, and browse is very expensive.
What is that?
Oh, it's like small trees and shrubs and, just different limbs. Paul can tell you it's a lot of different ficus in our particular facility.
So it's more than bananas.
There's they're tree cuttings that comes from California. It's an exotic species of plant, but they have plenty of it in California. And the San Diego Zoo is critical in cutting, boxing, and getting that here to Cincinnati. They've been a partner with us for many years. It's an expensive diet, but it's a diet that works. It generally keeps them healthy, happy. They're a unique species, and they're an ancient species also. They haven't been kept in zoos for generation after generation. So the more natural you can keep that diet for now, the better.
And so what other expenses do you have besides food?
And then there's the expenses from the crew side of things. Some of the conservation work we do over in Indonesia, the support we give to the RPUs who are patrolling the forests and trying to keep them safe. We serve as an ambassador for the wild population. So we have our two animals right now. We're very proud of them and what we might be able to do with them to assist with the overall conservation effort. But a lot of the work that goes on in the field in Indonesia, we're also a part of that and supporting that. And both Paul and I have been over to Indonesia multiple times to try and help our partners there.
If you are successful, what happens to the baby? Does it stay here? Does it go someplace else?
Nope, you can't even predict that at this point in time. The dynamic of the program changes so rapidly. We tend to we want our animals to make a difference. We want to send them where they're most needed, and so we'll evaluate that when that happens.
Thank you both so much for being here. We're going to keep an eye on this. You'll let us know, I'm sure, if there's an impending birth. Right?
You bet.
I'd love to.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. And this is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I've been talking about saving the rhinos this afternoon with Vice President of Conservation and Science and Director of CREW, the Center for Conservation and Research of Endangered Wildlife at the Cincinnati Zoo, Dr. Terry Roth, and Team Leader of Ungulates at the Cincinnati Zoo, Paul Reinhardt. In a moment, we'll be talking about concussions and how studies are finding they be more serious than originally thought. This is Cincinnati Edition.